What's going on, everyone? Welcome to another episode of For the Love of Cinema, a movie podcast, where our motto is, we just hope it doesn't suck. This is episode 336A.
A?
Or this is episode 336, sorry, broken up into two parts, A and B.
Yeah.
Thank you. 336A, posting on 627, will be a discussion on The Flash. And 336B, posting on 630, will be a discussion on Against the Ice from Netflix. We're a little late on that, but very, very much up to, very, very much worth watching and talking about. I am one of your hosts, Grayson Maxwell. Joining me, as he does every week, is my co-host, Roger Stillian. And Chris was nabbed by government G-men. I saw it happen.
You saw it happen?
I saw it happen.
I'm pretty sure he's just on vacation.
Well, one of those is true. One of those is true. We may be seeing him again next week.
Maybe not, though, I guess.
All right. What's going on this week, Roger? What is happening?
Oh, not a whole lot. Not a whole lot. Looks like we're going to get some nasty storms here later, so we got that going for us. I don't know if that's exciting or not, but
who's down for good?
Who's down for a party, huh?
Yeah. Well, I like thunderstorm. I mean, it's been super so hot in Atlanta that, I mean, when it rains, I'm always glad because, you know, the plants need it, the animals need it. It's just, it's so damn hot. It's just so damn hot and dry. It's literally like walking outside. Some days it feels like walking outside into an oven. It's just terrible. And well, granted, for me, I don't wear like shorts into work. I wear like long sleeve shirts and, you know, a nice button up shirt and a sweater and a vest. If, you know, I try to look nice at work and jeans. So I'm a little hotter than I need to be, but damn it, it's just hot.
Yes.
It's hot everywhere. So did you watch anything else outside of what we watched for the show?
Well, so I watched new season of The Bear dropped, which is one of my favorite episodic shows from the last year. So it's nice. They dropped all at once on Hulu, so I can binge watch them if I want to. And I've also been following along with Silo on Apple TV with Rebecca Ferguson and Common and Tim Robbins in that. So that's
there's an interesting show. There's a lot of people in Silo that I've seen that. Yeah, those ads are really good. And maybe that's my new thing after Ted Lasso
it's not bad. So, I mean, I have Apple TV, so I might as well use it. I still watch soccer on it, which is cool. But, you know, they always have new stuff. So I figured I might as well start going through it. Always looking for something new to watch.
Is Silo anything close to Ted Lasso quality?
I mean, it's good. It's a complete, I mean, listen, it's not a happy-go-lucky soccer coach show, but I mean, it's good. And I don't, you know, I think 8 episodes are out. I think we're through 6 or 7 of them. And, you know, I don't fully know everything yet. So that's kind of nice.
You know, speaking of Ted Lasso, that Taika Waititi movie that we see with, Fassbender in it, coaching the soccer team. Do you think that's as a result of Ted Lasso? Someone writing something that's similar because of the success of Ted Lasso?
No idea, actually. I mean, soccer is the most popular sport in the world.
It is indeed.
It doesn't really need more publicity.
It doesn't. It's got hundreds of millions around the world that watch
billions,
it.
Billions, buddy.
Billions around the world. All right. I revisited Aliens this week, so I watched Prometheus, which doesn't cover enough ground. I watched Alien Covenant, which covers too much ground. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I started with Alien and Aliens and Alien 3 and then Alien Resurrection. And I'm just, instead of Prometheus, I would trade in Prometheus and Alien Covenant for just give me a 30 years later sequel with a very aged Michael Biehn, Carrie Fisher, or Carrie Newt, whatever her name is, the little girl Newt, and Sigourney Weaver being retrieved from space. And then we just pick up after the second Alien film. Like, why can't we just do that? Why are we not? Such a shame.
Probably because they don't want to.
Well, I don't think they understand that if you somehow find a way to put Hicks back in the Colonial Marines, give him a pulse rifle and a bunch of other guys fighting aliens, that's a $1 billion movie by itself. That's all people want, is more of aliens. When is Ridley Scott and the producers going to realize that? I don't understand it.
Rated R movies never made $1 billion.
But Aliens is one of those movies that is just one of those exceptions that it's just one of the better, if not, it's in the conversation for the best or one of the top three of that genre made by a very competent director and just people love it. So if you find a way to make that, put out, it wouldn't be hard. They're picked up even by the company who's the bad guy in all the movies, the company. Then they throw them back in another situation. More Marines trying to capture a species to bring back to Earth to harvest. That people don't understand it. I also don't like sorry, long-winded, but I also don't, now that I think about it, Prometheus and Alien Covenant, how the part of the intrigue of the alien was the fact that we didn't know anything about it. We didn't know anything about the origin of the space jockey, how the aliens got in the egg and got
in. Nope, just sort of happened.
But now the humans are involved in creating them. I hate that idea now that I think about it. I don't know how you feel about that, but I hate that idea that humans created the alien, pretty much. I don't like that idea now that I think about it.
The Joker made $1 billion.
Oh, well, there you go. There you go. But I don't know. I just, you know, people listening, you may agree, you may disagree, but I've always been, you know, very passionate about the Alien franchise. I think it's one of the most interesting franchises in film that we have. It's asking questions about the origins of life, you know, what happens, the moral implications of another species we come in contact with that doesn't have any moral allegiance. It's pure hostility. And I just think that's great. All those and more interesting questions to ask, but sorry.
I didn't know you liked aliens.
Well, now you do. Now you do. I only bought a replica pulse rifle. Hundreds of dollars on that. Love that. Love that thing. One of my favorites.
Why didn't you buy a real pulse rifle?
Because they don't exist, Roger. They're not real.
Sure, they don't exist.
Sure. Although one is...
That's a real loser mentality, Grayson.
That's right. The one that I think Michael Biehn used is in, I think, the Smithsonian Museum as part of the movie Weapons, which I think is really, really cool.
Just take yours in and trade it in.
Yeah, I'll just national treasure it out of there and put mine in its place. Yes.
Yeah, I don't see why you wouldn't.
Or Indiana Jones it. Yeah. All right. This is episode 336 of For the Love of Cinema, a podcast about movies, film, and cinema. Was posted each and every Tuesday and Friday at 5 a.m. on Podbean, which then distributes to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Amazon Music. Each and every week, we start with the box office, current and upcoming releases, what's streaming, trailers, and movies of the week. Without further ado, Roger. Let's jump into the box office. Very excited. Spider-Man crept back up to number one, as it is very much deservedly so. Another $19.3 million, bringing its worldwide total, Roger, you'll be very happy about this, $560 million.
Yes.
I'm so happy that movie's still doing well. Elemental, not doing well. $18.5 million, bringing its worldwide to $121, which is incredibly soft for a Pixar movie. Mm-hmm. Incredibly soft. The Flash, number three, $15.3 million. Its worldwide take is $210, which is way more than I thought this movie was going to make. Very happy it's doing well. No Hard Feelings, number four, $15.1 million with a worldwide of $24.6. We'll talk about that one next week. Transformers, Rise of the Beast, $11.6, making a total worldwide of $341. There we go. That's the number I want to see start getting up there. Very happy about that. Now maybe we will get that sequel.
We are going to get the sequel.
Although you argued even if it had stopped at 270, we still would have gotten the sequel.
Yes. Never a doubt in my mind.
All right. Let's look at 6 through 10 very quickly. Asteroid City, The Little Mermaid, Guardians of the Galaxy, number 8, number 9, The Blackening, number 10. Finishing off with The Boogeyman, Stephen King adaption. There's your box office. Not a whole lot of change there.
Guardians is still making money. That's hilarious.
It's still doing very, like, it's still like almost 10 a week. So that's good. Well, I mean, look, we all know those Marvel movies have incredible longevity if it hits well with people. So that's always a good thing. Well, there's your box. Not a whole lot of shake up there. Although I'm glad that Spider-Man has climbed back up to number one from number three. That makes me incredibly happy. That movie is, that movie's incredible. That should be in contention right now for the best movie of the year so far. Yep. It should be, but it won't be, but it should be. Let's take a look. Current and upcoming releases, shall we, my good sir?
Yes.
June 23rd brought us God is a Bullet, No Hard Feelings, and Past Lives. June 30th.
God is a Bullet didn't even hit top 10, huh?
Oh, didn't even hit. Nope, top 10. It did not. Sorry, Jamie Lannister, it did not. June 30th, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, Ruby Gilman, Teenage Kraken. July 7th, Insidious, The Red Door, and Joyride. July 12th, which is a Wednesday, a big one, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, Part 1. I'm very excited for that one. July 21, Barbie, Cobweb, and Oppenheimer. July 28, Disney's Haunted Mansion and Talk to Me. So Haunted Mansion was moved up from August to the end of July. Probably a smart move, but I don't think it's going to do it a whole lot of... The week before is Barbie and Oppenheimer. So not only without those movies does it matter that it moved up from early August to July 28th. That doesn't matter, but with Barbie and Oppenheimer, that absolutely does not matter because those are going to crush everything for the next 3 weeks after.
Yeah.
August 2nd is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Ninja. Mutant Mayhem. August 4th, Meg 2 the Trench Until Death Do Us Part. And we'll stop at August 11th, Gran Turismo and the Last Voyage of the Demeter. So there's your upcoming. I hope you're excited for some of those. I know I certainly am.
Absolutely.
And the more I see the trailer for the Meg 2, the less excited I'm becoming for it. So there's that too. I mean, as much as I love watching Jason Statham hold off a Meg, an ancient Megalodon beast that pretty much is the alpha predator with his foot on a wooden dock, it's ridiculous also. It's just ridiculous. However, it's going to be fun to watch. I have no doubt about that. Let's take a look at what's streaming Disney Plus this week as we're moving forward in a rotation. Of course, a very big one that made almost $3 billion in the box office and is not exclusive to Disney Plus, but is on Disney Plus. Avatar, The Way of Water by director James Cameron. Sam Worthington, Zoe Saldana, Sigourney Weaver, Stephen Lang, Kate Winslet, Cliff Curtis, Joel David Moore, Edie Falco, Giovanni Ribisi, to name a few. 2022. I do think this movie is worth a rewatch. As a matter of fact, I think the original Avatar into this one are worth rewatching because James Cameron's a hell of a filmmaker. And the more I think about The Way of Water, the more I like it. The more I like what the movie does, what it sets up. The more I like what the movie does with the loss of a son and then kind of just going back to the earth. The more I like that. The more I think about it, the more I like it. The more I like Sam Worthington and I love Sigourney Weaver coming back. The more I think about this movie, the more I like it. So I don't know how you feel about it, Roger, as kind of a retrospect looking back in December, but I'm a big fan of this one, and I'm going to give it another go and then another go after that.
When you want to dedicate 3 more hours?
Well, it is. I mean, I want to dedicate an entire workday to watching Avatar The Way of Water. Yes.
That sounds rough for you.
And another movie, I know I've talked about this within the last two loops of Disney Plus as far as what streaming is concerned. However, I'm on a high right now with 30 Years Later sequels, and there's a big one coming that was I know is announced, but I don't, because I know a friend of mine just got called to work on it. I don't want to say anything about it yet, but this movie is going to be a big deal, and it's on nobody's radar, but I really think it's going to be a big deal. But Tron Legacy by director Joseph Kosinski, again the same guy who did Top Gun Maverick, another 10. Jeff Bridges, Garrett Hedlund, Olivia Wilde, Bruce Boxleitner, Bo Garrett, Michael Sheen, 2010. I think that when you look at this movie as a Tron sequel, it's a lot. It's not regarded as well as when you look at it as a 30 Years Later sequel. Yeah. And that's a weird distinction to me.
A lot of people wanted a direct sequel to Tron, and it is not. I actually enjoyed Tron Legacy quite a bit.
Well, I liked it more than Tron, actually.
Yeah. I think the soundtrack is incredible. The visuals are incredible. The story's not the best story I've ever seen, but it's more than serviceable for Tron, honestly. So
we are getting a direct sequel to Tron Legacy now.
Good.
So I'm very happy. I don't know if Kosinski's going to do it. I hope he does, because it's kind of his baby now. But I do like what they did with... There are some moments in that movie that are so damn powerful that they're hard to ignore when you talk about sequels and 30 Years Later sequels. Not to mention, of course, the last sequence of everyone at the portal and like Jeff Bridges finally admitting, you know, to Clue that he messed up, that perfection isn't achievable and Clue's going to keep doing it, but he's also going to keep destroying worlds to do it. And I think that's a really great conversation with the music that cues up around him. It's one of those moments that just like when you watch it on a big screen TV or a movie theater, it's just like, wow, you're just kind of reeling from it. And then when you realize that they get away because they swap the discs, it's just incredible. And then they come out of it. And of course, earlier in the film, when she's only has the books, she's, you know, all of the books that Jeff Bridges took in, this philosophy books and all kinds of books that he thought were important to teach people about his world inside the grid. She's read them all, but she doesn't know the books reference like sunset. She's like, what's a sunset? What does it feel like? What does the sun feel like on your face? And of course, that comes back in a great way when Garrett Hedlund and her, now she's coming to his world, ride away. But that shot is held for like 40 seconds of them riding away in the sunset, that beautiful, beautiful score queuing up in the background, that very powerful Tron score coming in the background. And she's feeling the sun. Like, it's just one of those moments that's so perfectly done. And I think if you have Disney Plus, you've not seen Tron Legacy, you should check it out. And it's one of those, I think, very unique movies where you don't have to have seen Tron to understand it.
You do not.
they do a very good job the first, you know, 5 or 6 minutes of explaining what happened in Tron and why it's important that you know the vague, broad strokes of what happened in Tron. That's all you need to know. And then, you know, he gets the page from the old arcade and he gets sucked back into it. Fine. It's just, it's a good little 30 years later sequel. I think it's been massively overlooked.
Sure.
All right, Roger, you chose another one that we both, I think, spoke very highly of. Mm-hmm. Ron's Gone Wrong by director Sarah Smith, Jean Philip Vine, Octavio E. Rodriguez, Zach Galifianakis, Ed Helms, Olivia Colman, Rob Delaney, Justice Smith, Jack Dylan Grazer, 2021.
Absolutely. So Ron's Gone Wrong is a story. It's an animated movie. It's a family movie about a young guy who gets a robot that's not quite right, but turns out he's kind of perfect in every way. I mean, this is a fun movie for kids and families because it's adequately funny for adults too, and it has a good message to it. So I think everybody should watch Ron's Gone Wrong. The animation looks great, and the story really is strong. So he's one of the newest robots, but you know his programming's a little whack. So.
It's also hilarious, too.
Like, it is pretty funny.
That movie kind of fires on all cylinders, which for the... Was that Pixar or was that Disney?
It's Disney.
It's Disney. But for it's kind of an oddity these days because most of them don't really hit anymore with audiences. But Ron's Gone Wrong is one of those ones. It was very well written. The story was strong. And it was not... It didn't try to be more than it was. And I always appreciate that with scale. Because we always try to make these movies a bigger deal than they are, or these characters, or the plot, and it just sometimes doesn't come off. Well, all the time doesn't come off. But this one was just, it's kind of like magic in a bottle, and it worked. It worked very well. Let's talk about some trailers. Roger, what are we thinking about Heart of Stone with Gal Gadot, Jamie Dornan on Netflix?
Generic Netflix spy movie?
Generic Mission Impossible. That's what it is.
Okay, sure. Dollar Store Mission Impossible.
I don't know if it's a dollars because this is, knowing Netflix and budgets, this was absolutely $100+ million. So I don't think it's a dollar store version, but it won't come off as it won't come off as a James Bond or Bourne or Mission Impossible. It's just not going to come off as any of those. It's unfortunate, okay. But I can tell you it won't because I just know it won't. Gal Gadot is strong though, and Jamie Dornan is strong. So it's got two strong people in the cast that's important, and that certainly helps. But also, given Netflix's track record of not really fine-tuning or polishing scripts.
Well, hold on. Netflix didn't make this. Bought it.
Okay, that my mistake. I didn't do my research. Okay. So yeah, maybe it will be better than I think it will.
That's right. Because of that and that alone, it might not be the worst movie I've ever seen.
I agree. Hopefully it won't be the worst movie we've ever seen. And that's, you know, we want everything to be tens, but that's just not possible. But
I mean, her last name's going to be Stone, right?
Of course. Of course. And they're after this device that's going to it's going to destroy the world, or you know, it just, if they don't get it, and it's just it looks generic, it feels generic, but that's interesting. I would have thought it would have been, I wonder why Netflix bought this. Maybe they see promise in it. Maybe they say, oh, well, we can't make one that good, so maybe we should just buy one that good.
Sure. I mean, that works. Money's money.
I'm curiously aroused by this one. I like Jamie Dornan. Well, I like Jamie Dornan as an actor. I don't think he ever got his due. I think 30 Shades of Grey probably didn't do him any favors in the long run. However, I liked him as the Huntsman in the Disney. What was the Disney show with all the villains and all the heroes that came into real life? It was on ABC. You know what I'm talking about, though, right?
I do.
I loved him in that. Yeah, no, I don't. I forget what it's called, but it was a serviceable show, and he did a fine job. And I liked him in almost everything else he's been in. I'm always like, God, Jamie Dornan is great.
He's really good in Belfast.
That is his movie, and he's great in it. Yes, you're right about that. And Rodri watched it about the Irish company of men that try to avoid a war, World War III. Oh, the Siege of Jadaville.
I've never seen that.
We talked about it. Where him and his company of Irish soldiers hold off French legionnaires in Africa so they can't get through something to get to somewhere else.
And no, I've never seen that.
That's a very good movie, and Jamie Dornan is great in it too. And that's it's one of those movies that a bunch of unsung heroes which get recognized way late. I think in the 2000s they finally get recognized for helping to avoid another world war. But it's
stopping the wars, sure. Yeah.
Of course, that's a good. But I've always liked Jamie Dornan. Let's talk about Kraven the Hunter for 1 second. Aaron Taylor Johnson, Russell Crowe, Ariana DeBose, Alessandro Nivola. It's a feature. What do we think about Kraven the Hunter?
I mean, sure, Spider-Man villain. Sure, that's what Kraven the Hunter is.
Oh, I didn't know that. I don't know anything about. So okay, knowing that, how do you feel about this movie being on its own?
Well, I mean. Here's the thing. Sony has made multiple movies based off of Spider-Man characters that aren't A-list Spider-Man characters. And a couple have been okay. One of them has been atrocious. And then we have this one. The two that are okay. One, Venom 1 and 2. And then the other one is Morbius. And, you know, that is what it is. You know, part of our lexicon now is a terrible, awful movie. But I mean, Kraven the Hunter, it's got some star power in it. Of course, so did Morbius. So I guess we'll see how it plays out. I could really care less about Kraven's story. I think it's interesting, though, because he is the main villain in the upcoming Spider-Man 2 for PlayStation. So that ought to be interesting.
That's I mean, for those of you who wonder why Rogers brought that up, because that's going to be a massive deal.
Well, Spider-Man will be a massive deal, period. So yeah. Those games are incredible. And
are they commercially well accepted and make hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars when you look at everything sold and rented and all that stuff, but also they're also like 9s out of 10.
Yeah, they're very good.
On the quality scale. So it's going to be a big deal. It's going to really drive PS5 sales. And
yeah, Kraven will, he is one of the main villains. The other one is, I mean, if you've seen the gameplay trailer, and I hope so at this point, because it is awesome, especially if you haven't seen it yet, Grayson, we get Venom suit Spider-Man. So that's pretty badass too.
We do. And I'm very excited for that one. I'm actually,
that's going to be, we just talk about Spider-Man on PlayStation for a while. And that's cool. Yeah.
Miles Morales, also a very serviceable game. Very amazing.
That's like Spider-Man 1.25.
Yeah. That's a great title. I didn't mean to say serviceable, makes it sound like it's not, but that's also a great title.
So it's very good. It's just not nearly as long as Spider-Man, because it was really just to introduce Miles into that world. So that's pretty cool.
I don't really know how I feel about Kraven the Hunter. And I don't have any knowledge of these characters outside of the movie. So I look at the comments on the YouTube, and it doesn't, they're not great.
I mean, he does look like the guy though, so that's kind of cool. I mean, he's in pretty good shape.
I do like Aaron Taylor Johnson. I've always, even from Kick-Ass days, I've always liked Aaron Taylor Johnson.
No, he's always like, he's not really bad in anything.
No, I think he's a very strong young male lead that has incredible potential to grow into A-list. Mm-hmm. If he makes the right choices. There's only like I think 5 or 6 of them that I really would put on that same level. But yeah, I think, and of course goes back to he's in the King's Man movie we talked about earlier.
Sure.
I don't know how I feel about this, but I really hope it does not go the way of Morbius.
I mean, look, here's the thing. Chances are it probably won't be the best movie we've ever seen, right? But it can't be as bad as Morbius, because if it is, like, they have to stop making these films, right?
I mean, it
like, I'm not even trying to make that as a joke. If the movie is as bad as Morbius ended up being, like, dude, put it away. Just close it up, go a different direction, find some other shit to make movies about.
Well, it doesn't make any sense, because the movies we get from Spider-Man in the Marvel Universe are very good movies. The movies Into the Spider-Verse and Across the Spider-Verse, those are, if they're not 10s, they're 9.5, 9.75. Like, they're right there at the cusp. So if they can't do it, like, why can't they just do it all the time? That's my question to you.
Why isn't every movie incredible? I don't know. They just aren't.
Every movie isn't made by the same studio. Those movies are all made by the same studio. So, I mean, they're all Sony movies. So I don't know. Maybe there's a disconnect somewhere, but I don't know. But I'm kind of lukewarm on Kraven the Hunter, and I imagine a lot of people probably are also very lukewarm on Kraven the Hunter.
Yeah.
One more. Let's talk about Dumb Money with Seth Rogen, Pete Davidson, Anthony Ramos, Mahala LaHerold, Shailene Woodley, Clancy Brown, Vincent D'Onofrio, Sebastian Stan, Paul Dano, Dane DeHaan, Nick Offerman, America Ferrera feature. Why such a big cast, you ask? I didn't even know until I watched the trailer. This was a big deal about a year ago when a lot of people made a lot of money off of the GameStop stock short selling.
Still pumping it up, baby.
Still pumping it up, which I think this movie's going to be very, very well watched. I think it's going to be very well in the box office.
I mean, it's timely. You know, it's not too far off of when this actually happened, so people are going to remember. And the story actually is pretty rad, so I'm here for it. I think it ought to be cool. Big time cast. It's going to be very R-rated. Should be pretty funny.
Huge cast. Not just big time cast. Huge cast. A little younger of a cast than I'd like to see in a movie like this, but it is a young person's thing, I think.
Sebastian Stan's hair is incredible.
It's always incredible. Sebastian Stan's a very beautiful man. He is handsome. Handsome son of a bitch. Yes, that's in a, you know, we love Nick Offerman. I like to see Dane DeHaan. We haven't seen him in a while. I think Valeria was the last major thing we saw him in, which was a flop. But I'm happy to see him again. I'm also like very excited to see some of the facts in this movie because it just happened. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people are still kind of not okay with this. You know, the government still, I think the U.S. government is still involved in this in some small way of stopping this from happening a second time, which now we know as a public that it can be done.
You can change the rules.
You can manipulate very heavily a free market system, which is the stock market. So it's interesting, but I think that movie is going to be lightning in a bottle. I sure hope so anyway. All right, Roger, let us, if we can, move into talking about The Flash.
Mm.
What say you, good sir?
I mean, sure.
All right.
It's about that time.
About that time, indeed. Let's get some particulars out of the way. Rotten Tomatoes. And this makes sense to me. 65% on the tomato meter and 84% on the audience score.
Sure.
Which I can absolutely 100% agree with.
Yep.
On that one. Let's talk about some particulars.
Oh, before we dig into it, talking about Rotten Tomatoes, I want to talk about Rotten Tomatoes for 30 seconds about a different movie. So the Rotten Tomatoes score for Indiana Jones has crept back up into the 60s.
Where was
it? Did you know?
I didn't.
In the 40s.
Oh, so are we thinking that's some kind of manipulation?
I don't think so. It's not officially scored by them yet. Like, they haven't hit their qualification for, you know, how many before certified fresh or rotten or anything yet. So it's interesting to see how it turns out.
I just don't. Does anyone care about Indiana Jones anymore?
No, I expect it to be awful, but I just thought that was interesting that I saw that it had climbed up to what most people consider respectable. So.
Yeah, you're right. Especially with, you know, I mean, if that was Metacritic score, that'd be more than respectable. That'd be, you know, pretty good, but I don't know, but we'll see when that comes out. I just don't have my hopes. A
couple of weeks
for that,
but yeah, I just popped into my head there. Sorry about that.
No worries. I don't have high hopes for that one, and I don't think the world does either. Let's talk about the cast for The Flash. Ezra Miller.
Yep.
Sasha Kelly.
There's more people.
Michael Shannon. Well, Ezra Miller and Ezra Miller and Sasha Kelly, Michael Shannon, Ron Livingston, Maribel.
Ezra Miller.
Yeah. Maribel Verdue, Kiersey Clemons, Ante Shrayu, Michael Keaton, which I'm happy to see, Ian Lowe, Sorsa Monica Jackson, Ruby Mancuso, directed by Andy Muschietti. You directed by Ezra Miller, written by Ezra Miller, all the Ezra Millers. Yes, yes, yes. Roger, what's The Flash about?
So The Flash is exactly what I thought it was going to be. A movie about Flashpoint where Barry Allen tries to go back in time to save his mother and breaks lots of things. Lots and lots of things.
And we've already seen this on the Marvel side, of course, with Spider-Man. Breaking their reality and with Doctor Strange kind of helping him hold it together what little they could. So we've seen this on the Marvel side. Now this is on the DC side. However, when you're comparing this movie, so Doctor Strange was the one where Spider-Man screwed everything up, right?
Going yes.
The Multiverse of Madness.
No.
No. Sorry.
That's No Way Home.
No. Okay. No. No. No Way Home. Okay. So that was the one where they screwed it. All the timelines got messed up, and then all the Spider-Man were able to come into his thing. What I was surprised at is, and this one is a broad stroke of just a first thing, I was surprised that we didn't get all the Batman in one timeline, or all the Flashes in one timeline, or all the Supermen in one timeline. I was surprised at that. Given the recent success of the Spider-Man movie, I was surprised they didn't audible to do that. However, it makes more sense that we didn't, given that we're playing with alternate timelines because of the Flash rather than multiverses.
Well, they explain their time, their multiverse stuff a little bit different, and I won't get into it deeply, but every time somebody goes back in time to change something, it creates an entire new strand, not just a branch off the what most people consider the linear timeline. It's not a branch from that point. It resets everything in that timeline. So many things can be different. That's why Michael Keaton is playing Bruce Wayne here, when I thought for certain he was going to play Thomas Wayne, Bruce's dad, because that's generally the Flashpoint story. So I thought that was kind of interesting. And they explain it in some ways that actually makes sense. So, you know, that's fine.
So going into it, Roger, what was your theory 2 years ago when this movie was, you know, well on its way and we knew about it? What was your theory?
So whenever we first saw anything for Flash, you know, I found out it was going to be regarding the Flashpoint story, I banked very heavily on the fact that this is going to be DC's way to reset lots of stuff, because that was deep into DC is really struggling to make a good movie. It's still funny, after two more years, they're still kind of in that same, we're spinning our wheels here with all this. And we've actually already begun the reset process, which is kind of interesting. But I said then that at that point, when Barry goes back in time and changes stuff, when he comes back to the present, anything DC wanted to change, they can start fresh with new people and new stories if they want to. So, and
I think this movie does accomplish some of that.
Well, it does. It at least changes some major characters, at least in some form. And we at least get to see one other person that's still part of this universe, which makes a lot of sense because his movie comes out in December.
Now, we know release schedules that there is another Aquaman in December.
There is another Aquaman in December. Yes.
What else do we know between now and Gunn's movie? Is there anything?
Nothing.
God, it's going to be like 2 years of nothing from DC then. I don't know if
here's the thing. That's okay, because you just got to start getting them right.
Gunn will. That's the thing, is Gunn will get them right. He, you know,
and his next thing is what? Superman, right?
Correct. And we don't think that the one offbeat cameo is going to be Superman, do we? That's just me spinning my wheels.
No. I think that legitimately is fan service.
That was awesome fan service. And when we get into discussion, we'll talk about what we're talking about. But that was awesome fan service, and I really appreciate that they did that. Because a lot of people, like, that's the one thing that, you know, you can still surprise people in conversation by saying, hey, in 2000, or what, 998, 99, 2000, well, this actor was supposed to play Superman. And people were like, what? No way. It doesn't make any sense. But yeah, legitimately, that's who it was. So going into this, I'm actually very happy with the Flash movie that we got. It could have been a lot worse, and it could have not done what we needed it to do, but it's done what we needed to do. And what I think is better is what the complete outcome of what's happened is. We still don't know that. So DC still has some wiggle room with what actually got reset towards the end.
Yeah, so we don't actually know. The only thing that we can say for certain is that Batman is different, or his Batman is different, and that Aquaman is still mostly the same Aquaman that we know.
But there are other differences too, and that's those will be important. The end of the movie is more important than I think we have any idea it is right now.
Sure.
And I really hope Gunn plays with that when he does the whole reset. But I also have theories as to the Flash is going to be an Aquaman, because I think it has to be. You know, I think he has to be in the Aquaman film.
Maybe.
Elseways doesn't make sense. But look, let's go back. Where are we with this Barry Allen in the Flash? We're post Justice League.
We are.
And we are at a slightly older, slightly more mature Barry Allen.
We are Barry Allen is coming into his own as a superhero.
We are indeed. And he's learned lessons based on the previous films that still do matter. He's learned, you know, the Justice League, and, you know, he's learned from his powers what he can and can't do. And this is his movie, and I'm very happy about that, because we never really got, before the Justice League, do we have any Flash?
No, not really.
So he just kind of appeared in the Justice League film, which was, you know, great for the time, but we didn't really know the dark 5 years we were in for.
Then we watched him run with his legs bending the wrong way.
Which I'm glad they somewhat fixed.
Look, when he goes into his speed for, you know, his speed slowdown running, it's weird, but it works because it's very consistent. It never looks very different through the movie, and you adjust to it pretty well. I was okay with that.
I agree.
So one thing I do want to talk about real quick before I don't want to get off track is I do want to talk about the CGI in this movie. I think they do a pretty decent job here. And because, listen, this movie is very CGI heavy, and we've seen some really bad CGI lately. So I want to call out for this one looking okay. So I think they did a good job making sure they got that part of this right.
And they did. So I'm very happy with what we got as. And I want to kind of be careful with the spoilers here, because if you haven't seen The Flash, some of it is meant and does come off as, if you didn't know it's there, it's a great surprise.
Yeah.
So I'm going to try to hide some of the stuff in discussion.
I don't know about that.
Well, you can hide it a little bit, I think. But okay, let's move forward then. So this Barry Allen, this movie has what I'm happy to say is it has an emotional backbone here. It has an emotional core.
Barry the entire Allen. Story of Flashpoint is Barry going back in time when he realizes he's capable of going backwards and forwards in time to go back to the day his mom was murdered and stopping that from happening.
Which is a big deal for The Flash. It kind of sets up his entire character moment, The Flash.
Well, it's actually very similar to something we just watched in Across the Spider-Verse. It is a canon event.
One thing, so if you've seen the trailer, then you've seen obviously the scene when Bruce is talking to him. Ben Affleck Bruce is talking to him about Barry. Now you have to understand, if you'd mess with time, you could change everything.
Everything.
You could destroy everything that we've set up. And it's the one thing in that conversation that I love that you don't hear in the trailer is which I think is matured above what I thought this movie was going to be, given our previous track record with the DC movies, is he also brings up the fact that, Bruce, I can go back and save your parents.
Yep.
And I thought, wow, that's an interesting, I hope we get some kind of segment of that. Now, I'm sad to say we didn't really get any kind of segment of that. But for them to bring it up, I thought was an interesting little intersection where they could have gone off and given him and Batman another look at Martha and Thomas Wayne, which could have opened up more intersections to who plays, you know. I was thinking of the possibilities. We didn't quite get that, but I don't think the movie was they focused on Barry Allen enough that this isn't Batman's movie. It's the Flash's movie.
Well, I want to make one comment on that and then we'll move on. As I bet you there is a much longer version of this movie and they had to make sure they trimmed it down after all the Ezra Miller's a crazy asshole thing.
Yes, true.
Because they didn't want to be like, well, hey, look, you know, that guy we all think's a stupid dick. Here's a 3-hour and 10-minute movie you guys need to go watch.
Well, this movie isn't short, though.
Well, no, it's 220. It's solid, but like it fits this story. I bet you there's a little bit long. I mean, obviously, there's at least a little bit of a longer version out there that might have some alternate things like that. I won't say 100% certain, but I bet you there is.
I agree with you 100%, and I hope there is, just because I want to see. But I thought that was an interesting thing to bring up in conversation, given how, I mean, especially in the DC universe, as an audience that watches and appreciates his movies, we've watched Bruce's parents die a number of times now. And I think, you know, that would have been interesting to see them say, but also that would have changed everything. Again, it would have changed everything. Well,
the original Flashpoint story, when Barry goes back in time, it's Thomas that's still alive because Martha and Bruce got killed. So it's an older, grumpier version of Batman.
And I wonder why they didn't go with that in this one, but that's a different conversation for another day, but they could have, and I'm sure that was in the conversation of in the writer's room years ago.
Sure should have been.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
One of the most iconic comic books ever made. You can liberally take anything you fucking want from it.
I agree, and it's... Okay, so let's talk about where we... The Flash. When he ends up knowing what he can do, because of this very clunky opening scene, which I thought was an odd choice of the Flash saving a hospital wing. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but the Flash being called by Alfred because none of the other heroes are available to save the hospital wing. I was a little surprised that we got a bunch of babies falling from a demolished hospital wing building. I was a little surprised that. I was also surprised that he sticks a baby in a microwave.
So I would have been really disappointed if the whole movie was as fucking corny as that entire scene. I really, truly would have.
Well, is corny the right word, or is getting bad? You in? I don't know. Yeah, well, no, it definitely was not great. Corny.
So it's not good.
No, corny is a better word. I don't want to say it's bad, but corny, it's, I can say it's bad without saying it's bad. So corny, but it's just, I wonder why we even got that generic ass scene in the movie.
I think it would have been better if he's just pulling people out, going room to room at like super fast speed, pulling people out before the building collapses. He doesn't need to be catching babies falling out of a fucking window.
I agree. And that even could have introduced him to what he could go back and alternately changed, even if it's only a minute or two, but mm-hmm. that makes a difference, is snatching people and saving them. Again, why they did what they did with the babies, why the fuck they put a baby in a microwave, I will never understand who said okay to that. Like, why is that? Why would you do that? But the scene manages again to play off as a upbeat. Oh, he saved the babies. Great. We love the
Yay
Flash.
Yay for Barry.
Yes, yes. Again, it's one of those scenes we probably could have done without, or vastly rewritten it to take up not only less time, but also accomplish more.
Yep.
So the opening scene is what it is. It is, but you're right. It is corny. It is almost laughable. But the rest of the movie is not like that, thankfully.
No, it is not. And yes, that is a very good thing.
And then, so the next core of the film is Barry not only realizing he can go back, but also going back. And
so, yeah. Goes back a few years to see, you know, doesn't go all the way back to the day initially where his mom died. I mean, he goes back initially the day that his mom died, and then kicks back in a second time because he starts to learn how to control it a little bit better. And then he gets knocked out of his little speedball thing into a very specific date. So thought that was kind of interesting.
A very important date also is he learns he can go not only backwards, but forwards, which is also kind of a huge revelation for him too. But also I like that he has those powers, because I like the fact that the Flash is reckless, because he should be at that age. You're only thinking of saving your own little world. Yeah. You're not thinking, I mean, stupid teenagers don't think of the grander consequences of what's going to happen.
Yeah. We get a lot of growth from Barry in this movie. So, that I'm very okay with, because
I agree.
Barry Allen is not an idiot. He does some dumb things early on in his Flash, you know, character development, but, you know, he's a really smart guy. He processes information at a billion times faster than everybody else. You know, there's a reason he's so smart, and everything that he does, he's trying to do it to help himself out and help out his family and help out his dad, who's unfortunately in prison for the murder of his mother, which he did not commit, by the way, whether in this world or not. Like, he definitely doesn't do that. But so it's interesting to see how, like, his arc through this movie, because we see multiple versions of Barry in this movie. We see Barry and then, like, 10 years... I don't think it's 10 years, but like 7 or 8 years difference in Barry's in this movie, and how different they are, and still yet they're the same person. You know what I mean?
Well, our Barry, the Barry that we follow, looks, it's interesting how they mature him up by putting him up against the younger Barry, who doesn't know, who hasn't experienced the great loss yet.
Nope, at all.
And it makes... It's an interesting way to punch up his maturity, because he looks like a fucking genius compared to alternate timeline Barry, which I thought was a cool way of doing it. Because Barry, you're right, Barry is a smart kid. He is. We just never got really the chance to see that, because there's nothing to compare it to until now.
No, and there's a very specific reason why he got knocked out of the Force on the same day, or that for that specific day. You know what that is, right?
No, I'm...
So when the Reverse Flash, the guy at the end of the movie in the purple suit, when he knocks Barry out of the speedball thing, it's the date. He has to knock him out there, because if he doesn't, young Barry Allen does not get his powers.
Oh, right. Of course. Yeah. I thought there was like a comic book reason for that.
Well, kind of, but like the short version of it is because Barry's mom didn't die in that timeline, that Barry was never going to become the Flash.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense, though.
So he never would have become a criminologist, never would have been doing CSI shit, never would have been dousing chemicals and struck by lightning. And then you never get Barry Allen. So that's why they have to go recreate it. When our Barry, you know, the older version of Barry loses his powers, which I thought was a nice thing because that is something that does happen in the Flashpoint comic. So much so that when he gets struck by lightning, as you see it happen in this movie, he actually gets struck like four or five times in the comic book version because he's just too goddamn stubborn to die.
Well, that's interesting. That moment you're talking about is one of the great moments of the movie. Sure. I think it's one of the great moments in the current DC timeline of how that goes down, how it's framed and who's in the background and why they're there. Mm-hmm. Fucking wonderful moment, man.
Yeah.
But I think we're jumping a little ahead here, but it's, do we ever find one thing we never really focused on who actually committed the crime?
No, because it's not really relevant. And who actually commits the crime in their universe is actually just a remnant of a Flash. So it's a whole paradox thing.
Well, that's the thing, is we never fully get into it, but it's, I thought they would have wanted to know that. But again, it's not, I mean, I want to give the movie maybe a little more credit that like it's not important that Barry find out who did it.
Well, they do a really good job of it now, and I don't want to harp it up anymore because I know I've talked about it many times. The actual CW show, The Flash, which is, I'm really sad that they never really give that dude a chance to be big screen Barry Allen. But like they do a good job of like talking about what happens when he goes back in time in that scenario. And their storyline is who killed his mom is just an evil version of The Flash who does it to basically taunt an underage Barry Allen. So
yeah, but in the movie, it doesn't come off like it doesn't. They never really give any indication either direction that
no,
that,
they just say it was just a home invasion gone wrong, which is, I mean, it's a very believable story in that aspect, but that's not necessarily canon, I guess.
Well, I mean, it is now if they keep this in the, which I don't know what Gunn's going to do, but that's, you know, that's the basis of the movie, is the intersection there when his mom dies. He's trying to figure it out. Determined to figure it out and go back. But when he goes back, he starts changing things to the point where he almost can't control what's being changed. And again, one of the beautiful moments of the movie is when he realizes, he goes back to what Bruce was talking about those intersections that you can't escape. Nope. Those are going to, you have to be careful of those because you can't escape it. They're going to keep happening and the consequences keep reverberating. They keep creating new webs.
There's no way for you to stop all of it.
So it's a shame. One thing I will, a side note, it's a shame that we got this movie, and it is, I think it's even better than okay. I think it's a shame that Ezra Miller has done what he's done in real life, because another one of these would have been very much liked by a lot of people, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. And obviously with all the negative stuff around Ezra Miller, you know, listen, maybe that dude just legitimately needs like psychological help, and that's very fair that he might. And listen, I'm not a therapist or whatever, but you know, they made sure that when they built this movie and all this bad shit happened, that they kept his mouth closed, didn't let him do any press, very casually dropped him off at the red carpet. He took some pictures, didn't do a single interview, watched the movie and left. Like that's what he did. And you know, the way that this whole series is going, and obviously, this movie is not really any change to what previously happened through like the Snyderverse version of what we have before. But like all of that is dead now. And it's weird that with Ezra Miller, you know, they needed this movie to happen so they can reset stuff, you know, like I said years ago. But it's weird that they didn't change him. You know what I mean? Because they could have. There could have been a different Barry Allen come out of this.
They very well could have. They very well, and they could even use the CW guy even.
That's right. Could have been anybody that they wanted to, and they didn't. So I don't know if they're going to stick around with him or just kind of casually like sunset the Flash for a while. And next time we see him, it's a version of the Flash that's not Barry Allen. It can be Wally West or Bart Allen or a handful of other guys who were the Flash. So I'd be anxious to see how that actually plays out, because this movie is a more than serviceable film. Like, I think it's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah.
I the problem is DC has been bad for so long. And look, I'm not trying to pile on DC. I've done that enough over the last few years to, you know, enough to write a book about. it's weird that a movie they get mostly right is one of the ones that comes with the most controversy just because some actor's a dipshit.
That is true. I mean? That is, and we've talked about this on episodes previous, that it's a shame that what if The Flash is actually a good movie, and it's one of the positive movies in the DC and limelight, and now, of course, Ezra Miller is being attached to it, it's just not going to get a lot of box office.
Well, and it's not, because its run is pretty much done. It's going to get snowed over in the next couple of weeks, and I'd be surprised if it's more or less in a couple of months before we see it on Max. So
I think we see it on Max before August.
Oh, I mean, that's fair. That's fair. Give it another 6 weeks or whatever, or 5.5 weeks, and move it along. But like the story that they tell here, and I want to talk just briefly because I don't want to spoil a lot of stuff. But when we see this world's version of Superman, that it's not actually Clark, that I think that's pretty cool. We don't have to talk about that too much. I like that they got Michael Shannon back as Zod, because listen, Michael Shannon is awesome.
Well, Zod's an interesting character too. I mean, mm-hmm. even as a villain, he's not just go here, blow up the world for no reason. He's got like complexities that make him an interesting villain, an interesting foil to Superman, especially, but an interesting villain in this movie too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I like the interactions we have with the multiple Barrys and other time travelers that we run into in this film, and I don't want to talk about that too much just because it is very spoilery. But the way that all this turns out, like, I like where this story, where DC is headed with this. If they want to, there is some light at the end of this tunnel. We haven't had a whole lot of wins for DC besides, like, the previous Aquaman and the first Wonder Woman. There's not a whole lot of good stuff that, they're really going to want to champion into the future, unless you consider like Suicide Squad and Peacemaker, those kind of things. And I think actually they probably do, because at least those are well received, even though they didn't make a lot of money, they are pretty critically acclaimed and pretty fucking funny, if you ask me. To know what cast of people that to take forward with a new Superman coming, the same Aquaman will be there for a while, and to see if we even get to keep, Ezra Miller. Like, I don't know what direction they go here. And it's, I hate to say that I was right, but this is their reset and they can do whatever they want. And I hope they get it right this time, or at least do better. And I don't want to see Bruce Wayne's parents die anymore. I don't want to see, I don't want to see Wonder Woman come out of the Amazon and be somebody different. If you're going to use Wonder Woman again, it needs to be her. It's probably not going to be, though.
Oh, God. To get rid of the first Wonder Woman movie from 2017 is to get rid of your star. Get rid of the best thing that they've ever made. That Wonder Woman to me stands up against the best of Marvel. To me, I mean, I know you don't feel the same, but certainly
it's a very good movie. But it's like that's their crown jewel, dude. That was 6 years ago.
Yeah, they started off such a strong note on that one too. That was,
and then they followed it up with an absolute disaster of a movie.
Fucking, it's a crime to make a movie that bad after making a movie so good. But so, I mean, to get rid of Wonder Woman 2, you have to get rid of Wonder Woman. But recasting Gal Gadot would be a mistake at this point.
Well, that's what I say. It's either, I think you shelf everybody for a while, unless you have a real serious plan for them. You don't need to just start sticking people in movies, which is ultimately what I think DC screwed up, trying to jump right into a Justice League movie without, establishing everybody beforehand. So,
well, hold on. Man of Steel was 2013, right?
Yeah.
The first Avengers movie was 2012, but they had already had five or six movies up to that point.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so then Justice League was 2017 or 2018? 2017, right? By then, seeing the success of all the Marvel movies, always hitting the $1 billion mark, DC, I'm sure they made a decision to jump the gun, and it was premature by several movies about, hey, we need this movie. We have to get it out. And that's when everything went, that's when the Snyder problem happened. And then the other director, what's his name, who made Firefly and Serenity, and Joss Whedon stepped in. It was a disaster. It was a perfect storm tornado of just absolute disaster. And it just didn't bode well for, DC. But also, if you talk to the DC faithful about, and I know Roger, you don't like the Snyder Cut. I'm not going to harp on that for more than a minute. But they do think it's legitimately a much better movie than the Justice League we got.
Sure. So that's fair. I won't fight anybody with that. But like I said, my entire and I'll make the joke again. If your movie's a three and you have to have a 5-hour version of it to get it from a three to a five, you still failed.
Yeah, I would, although I don't think it's quite a five. I think it's probably maybe a six or a six and a half.
Sure. But I mean, the point's the same.
Yeah. You're right. You're right. But it's unfortunate all this stuff happened, but also they could of course correct it a long time ago. Even with the fandom said, you know what, guys, we need to step back and we're really going to take our time with these next few movies. Please be patient with us. We're going to do one every 2 years and but we're going to get it back on track. They didn't do that either. They just kept doubling down on the same stuff that they didn't. And I mean, the damage that Wonder Woman 2 did is not enough people are talking about that. And that's a shame because that did a catastrophic amount of damage. It just completely destroyed the character of Wonder Woman. And that's you cannot downplay that because like she was your jewel, man. That was your what you're hinging everything on was that story with her and Bruce. So well the Man of Steel, the Batman, then her, she was, you know, one of your three. And that was bad. But getting back to the Flash is what DC has not done right in a while is made good decisions. And the Flash actually the movie itself makes good decisions. And I'm going to give the credit to the screenwriters and, of course, Andy Muschietti, who probably deserves, you know, they probably deserve the credit here. Is there's a great mix of comedy in this one and kind of levity that makes some of the scenes that are kind of ridiculous seem not so ridiculous. And that's not an easy thing to do.
It doesn't take itself overly seriously.
And I'm glad it doesn't because, you know, there's one of my favorite moments in the movie is when both Flashes are going down and one has like a handmade suit, which the montage of making the suit is in itself, I think, hilarious.
Yeah, it's funny.
Is when alternate timeline Barry Allen with the janky suit on looks at him with the rubber helmet.
Like sideways on his face.
And that sound they put of like squeezing a rubber duck in the bathtub. Like it just... Yeah. I laughed uproariously and for about 5 minutes. Other people, though, there was about 25 people in the theater that I was in, and everyone was laughing so hard. It was a great noise to hear, especially like you wouldn't have recognized that laughter. Like, am I in a DC movie right now when everyone is, you know, the whole community in the theater is laughing together at some well-written prank gag on like that doesn't seem like a DC thing, but I'm glad they were able to pull a lot of that off. And I think it was the Barry and Barry part that allowed him to do a lot of that. Mm-hmm. Because you have one Ezra Miller who's playing the much more mature, has been seasoned by the loss. And the other Barry who's kind of an idiot, but he's a child. Because he hasn't experienced the incredible...
His life is totally different.
Yeah, he's a man-child living at home with no responsibility and hasn't experienced the loss of his mother yet. When other Barry has had to grow up very quickly and experience all those bad things. So there's a juxtaposition of the Barry on the Barry, which I like a lot too. And then you throw in, and I don't think this isn't a spoiler, but then you throw in Michael Keaton as Bruce. It all kinds of works. So you have Barry and Bruce, all the bees.
Sure,
love it. And how do you feel about the introduction to the Bruce we get in this timeline?
I'm fine with it.
In the kitchen, you actually like the. I like that we pull up to that Ezra, of course. Barry is only going off of the information he has from the Justice League, and he knows all these people. And after the introduction of Batman and Wonder Woman in the beginning, then of course Ezra, before things get messed up, he still has the knowledge of who these people are, where they live. Mm-hmm. And he goes to, I like how after we get into the slightly altered timeline, is we go to the Wayne Manor, and it's decrepit. It is,
yeah.
For the most part, it's condemned. I mean, you look at that building, you'd be like, that building is condemned. And Bruce also has kind of faded into obscurity, but this Bruce is also a Bruce that has already saved Gotham enough that
he's older. Gotham is peaceful. He's retired.
That's the thing. Gotham no longer needed Batman.
Nope. So in this one of the safest places in America.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's kind of cool that we move forward a few years with the Batman storyline and we get the fact that Gotham is already it's safe, and Batman was no longer needed, so he kind of faded into legend, which I like that concept. I like that idea a lot.
Yep.
And we go into the Wayne Manor, and of course, there's this, I mean, absolutely ridiculous fight scene between Barry and Bruce, but happy to see, you know, Michael Keaton, you know, pushes, you know, hippie hair back.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, but this Batman's also... He may not come across like in some of his actions, but he has also experienced some shit in his day.
Well, he experienced loss. He doesn't have his Alfred anymore.
No, he does not. Yeah. And it's the thing is, like, he's a more grizzled and more gruff than I think they were having Keaton play. I mean, I think they're having Keaton play a certain way because they wanted comedy and levity. Mm-hmm. However, flash forward, you know, 45 minutes when we get to the inevitable T-section that all the heroes are stuck in, is that Bruce is, he's obviously very troubled. Mm-hmm. That Batman is, he has some demons, man, on his, that cause him to do what he does.
But, all bad people have demons.
Well, that's the thing. You know, it's a very dark, you know, DC always tends to be darker than Marvel anyway, but it's, I do like that there's almost two different Batman in this movie. You know, the dichotomy between the Bruce and the Batman is, he almost plays him differently. And I kind of enjoy that because, you know, the Bruce is he's just a guy living his life now. And the Batman is someone who failed once and now has a penance on his shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
Because what, I mean, he does, you know, for lack of a better word, he, you know, there is a moment in this movie where Batman does make the ultimate sacrifice for what he thinks is going to be the greater good.
Yep.
And again, I like where we go into this whole thing with Zod landing, and then, you know, we have the U.S. military kind of resisting him and trying to push him out, but then our heroes have to come, and this whole thing in Siberia, I don't think played out the way the movie wanted it to play out.
Yeah, I mean, they have a version, you know, this world's version of, you know, Superman locked up, because of course we do.
Well, it's who plays Superman and the you know, the, let's call it the attributes behind this Superman, I think, is super interesting, though, because it isn't, of course, the Superman that we all know and have come to.
Kal-El.
It's not Kal-El. It is a different, it is someone else.
It's Kara, his cousin.
In the same family, but again, it's Kara's beef with Zod is no different, especially when, mm-hmm. So I don't, that's one of my big red flags with the movie, is they go into this whole thing with Zod explains what he did with Kal-El, and it,
yeah,
sends,
they found him.
And it sends him into a kind of a blind rage. It sends her into a kind of a blind rage. We never kind of get a resolution to that.
No. And that's okay.
But is it okay?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough. Why do you think it's okay and I don't? Let me ask you that
because
question.
Because you don't want me to spoil anything, so I can't.
Fair enough. But I
mean, legitimately, if I answer that question, I spoil the movie.
Well, all right, fair enough. But we do catch up with Zod and what happened to Kal-El. And it's kind of a shocker if, you know, because, again, when we come out of this movie, we don't know what has been retained and what hasn't been in the timeline. So I'm almost excited for the movie that follows this up. And it's a shame it's got to be Aquaman because it's going to be less Flash. But I'm excited for how we learn what changes have actually been made.
Well, hold on. I do have to bring up one other thing. That the next movie is not Aquaman. The next movie is Blue Beetle.
Do we care about Blue Beetle? I mean, so does the current DC timeline care about Blue Beetle?
Yes.
Okay.
So here's the thing. James Gunn says this is the first movie in the reset for DC.
Oh, I've been mistaken. I thought James Gunn's Superman was going to be the first movie in the reset.
That's the first one that he's completely hands-on with.
Oh, okay. So Blue Beetle's importance is now
legitimately paramount. How I look at it is, if James Gunn would have been like, shelf Blue Beetle, send it straight to Max, we're not ever going to use it, they would have done that. And he said, no, I can work with this.
Okay, you know, so I mean? my mistake. So, but I mean, Aquaman's going to be the bigger movie in December.
Yeah, of course. Then, but I do want to get that out there. Yeah. There is another movie coming in like a month and a half that is supposedly going to be part of this, which, just remember, Barry did change things, and that could be, you know, that can be part of that kind of movie.
God, I really hope they lean into it, because,
well, Blue Beetle looks bad.
Yeah, bad trailer is bad movie, for sure. But I really, what I don't want to happen, and what I feel like is a very real possibility, is we watch Blue Beetle. I'd almost forgotten that was DC completely, but we watch Blue Beetle and there's nothing mentioned about anything that happened in The Flash. That's a mistake. That's an absolute mistake. Unless there's some kind of time difference, a different, you know, it goes back 20 years or something, and then we move forward. But what do you think about that?
That's a real cop out if they do that.
But I mean, DC is known for that. They do have cop-out answers all the time.
Well, I mean, they do have a time traveler, so they can do anything they want, technically.
They could. And I don't want to get into Blue Beetle on this. We'll talk about that one in a few weeks, but I also don't... Does anyone really have high hopes for Blue Beetle?
I have higher hopes for it, knowing that I know that now, but no.
That's interesting.
I mean, look, though, we just watched a bad DC movie with Shazam, right? And... You know, I want to talk about Shazam for 30 seconds here because, like, I liked the first Shazam movie. You and Chris really did not, right? I was really let down that Shazam 2 was as bad as it was because I thought for sure that, hey, you know, they kind of got this first movie. It was okay. You know, we're going down the right track. And then they throw out this pile of garbage. And, you know, it's terrible that I have to look at Shazam is gone. Right. Like that character will not be part of anything else going forward now. But like I expect Blue Beetle to be closer to Shazam than it is to Flash. But, you know, maybe Blue Beetle survives just because of who it has in it. So who knows?
I mean, it's certainly a possibility. And I if that's the case, I want it to be the case. But I mean, if James Gunn has already put his stamp of approval on it, I have no reason to think that. Yep.
Even they keep just the same kid doing the Blue Beetle, you know, the good young actor that is happy to play that role. Because yeah, that's absolutely hard to do. It's hard to get people to tie themselves to, you know, four or five movies, right?
Well, as we know from the Marvel, a lot of those guys just wanted out of the roles.
Yeah. Like, hey, look, man, I've been doing the same character for 12 years. You know, I love the paychecks, but I got other shit I want to do.
Yeah, I totally understand. And Marvel does. I'm sure Marvel consumes it. Like, when they do a movie, like Marvel consumes your life for about a year and a half.
Oh yeah.
So I mean that's definitely a thing. But
especially if you gotta get back in shape.
So then yes, and I am, I guess, a little more excited for Blue Beetle knowing it's got Gunn's stamp of approval. But again, what the X factor here is how much of the Flash is Gunn gonna is he banking on gonna keep? So we'll I mean but out. There's so let's get back to the Flash to talk about the last battle here, and I don't want to be super spoilery, but there's a lot of great in this last. It's actually a very long sequence. It's like 30 minutes of you know pretty nonstop action, which I appreciate. Yeah. Again, it's
start, Michael stop rewind.
Michael Shannon brings a weird kind of villainous presence again.
He's a killer, man. He's a killer.
So are his people. So are his lieutenants, which I appreciate. It's we get a lot of stuff happening here because this is when the Barry and Barry are working together to, you know, our Barry, you know, Barry A is giving Barry B kind of a crash course on this is what you can do.
Teaching him
to
be the Flash. Yep.
I have the suit. You don't. So you have to understand that you can't just zip around here without dissipating the charge.
You have to dissipate energy.
You have to dissipate or you will die. You cannot just keep continuously doing this. So we have to be smart about this, dumb Barry. We have to be super smart about this. And it's what I like the most about that is it's them kind of figuring out how to reset the timeline again and again and again so they can go back and save people. Now, what they learn, of course, is there are several points in this battle where it just goes bad and we lose very, very vital heroes.
Yeah.
And they keep trying to go back and reset it. And we keep seeing this. What do you call that? Nexus where they end up, where the whole thing like kind of intersects, that ball of red and
so that's in this universe they call it the time bowl.
Okay they call it the time bowl, but that's super important.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's where our Barry, the Barry
that in the speed force, yep,
that's what we want him to make the realization of, look, we can keep doing this a million times but nothing's going to change. And of course when you finally make the realization, because you do see that the one that knocks him out of when he's doing his speed thing,
you're about to be very spoilery.
Well, we see a very, someone we haven't seen yet, knock him out. And we don't see them again until the end.
Do we?
Well, I mean, yeah, don't we?
No.
Okay. No, well, we see who's meant, isn't that who knocks him out of the speed thing in the beginning to put him in a certain place?
Yeah, but that's not who. That's somebody you don't realize.
Oh, well, I don't realize. I'm just not into the... I just don't know the lore yet, but...
Oh, no, you know it.
Oh. Well, when are we ever going to revisit that, then?
You're not.
Ah, that's a shame. Not because it's what's going on with DC, or not because it's not important anymore.
Both.
Oh, okay, fair enough. What is important is... What I think one of the greater moments in this movie is when you realize what's happening... That's a pretty big moment when you realize who becomes what and why they become that. that's important, I think. Like, that's kind of a, one of those nexus intersections that, like, you can't, you have to, you have to really get the gravity of that character and why they are the way that they are. So, you know, I mean, like, that's that. So that to me is one of the more interesting parts of the movie, is especially when we get to that nexus, is that's what I like about that, is we get, we keep seeing the results. And as a result of seeing, is it keeps getting like layer upon layer upon layer upon layer upon layer upon layer of more and more stuff, which we see, you know, we see some Supermans, we see other characters, the other versions of the Batmans, and we see them, you know, even quickly if they go by. It's, I thought that's awesome, even as fan service. That's awesome stuff.
It's what's happening in that universe is breaking everything else.
So, but that's, how catastrophic is that to Barry's universe? That's the question. Our universe, our Justice League universe. That's the question that we never get answered in this movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what kind of is the thing is. And it, going back to like the better moments of this movie is, I think one of the great moments of this movie is, you know, if you're watching it to pluck out a moment, which I very often do, is the moment where he's, Barry, as you referenced earlier in the comics, is after losing his powers and then alternate timeline Barry gaining the powers, but not really understanding how to use them, but because they have to speed up the process and use the powers to save people, he has to get his powers back. So he has Bruce helping him get his powers
recreate
back.
The accident. Yeah.
But they're super unsuccessful about it.
Yep.
And then I love how, I mean, Bruce knows it's over. Other Barry knows it's over. And then we get the camera slowly turns and we see a silhouette in the background. Mm-hmm. Of a very important
someone's
character.
Someone's come to help
after they've taken off because they don't agree with what's going on. Mm-hmm. They have other things to do and they don't care about what's going on with our Barry. And then that person helps to bring, to get our Barry back. Like, I think that's one of the best moments in the movie. I really do.
Sure.
That's an amazing superhero moment.
Well, the superhero moment in this movie is, you know, and I don't want to be spoilery, but it's when our Barry is in the grocery store with his mom. And that's the superhero moment.
That's the growth moment.
That's right.
Is, but like, and you know, Roger, I was eating that up. I was crying. Yeah. I was absolutely.
You cried?
Crying. I look, Roger. You and me are movie criers. I'm more of a movie crier, but damn it, that.
Listen, I am a movie crier, but no, I did not cry during that.
Well, and I'll tell you why it did, because it's no. I mean, I've told the story a number of times in the show that my mom is not the healthiest woman in the world. She, you know, she battles with cancer a lot. And the last time she had a serious bout, like, I had to go through that moment where, like, I didn't think I was going to see her again. I thought that was it. So that, of course, that moment on screen took me to, and I was weeping. I was weeping, man. I had to compose myself before I stood up and walked out of the theater. I had to compose myself, but I was crying pretty hardcore. Like, it was, tears were coming down, but it's also a very cleverly written moment. A huge growth point for Barry.
It's excellent.
Yeah. It's just, you know, I love that moment. You know, it has to do with the can of tomatoes and, you know, Barry and his mom. It actually reminded me of that, the Adam Project.
Sure.
The scene in the bar when he sits down with who plays his mother in the very famous actress? What's her name? 13 going on 30. Jennifer Garner. Okay. Where he sits down with her and she has no idea who he is, like not a damn clue who he is, but he does. And he's holding back tears. He's holding back all of this emotion because he lost her early on. And he's seeing his mom again for the first time in years and years and years. And of course, he can't, because that movie introduces, you can't let people know who you are without breaking everything. So he can't let her know directly who he is. But what he says when he gets up and leaves the bar, it's unmistakable to her who he is in that moment.
Yep.
Which is what I love about that scene. And this one, so in The Flash, we don't get any of that time paradox stuff. We're like, oh no, both Barrys can't be in the same place because they are in the same place. And I don't know, in Barry's room, I there are lots of posters of movies that do this. Of course, they reference the Back to the Future quite a few times, right?
Yep.
And I'm positive I saw a Matrix poster, at least one Matrix poster, maybe an Inception poster, and a couple other posters of movies that do this time traveling stuff that deal with the paradox. But we never they didn't ever approach that in this movie, right? Like, oh, you can't be here if he's here, because then he'll know and everything will just implode.
Well, they do talk about paradox stuff a little bit, but no, they don't really talk about it.
But nothing with any huge consequence.
No.
And I think that's a shame. And I do also love the banter between Barry and Bruce, that a very mature Barry learning and understanding, because Bruce has that superhero knowledge of you have to understand what has to happen next.
Sure.
We're not all going to come out of this, kid. Like, there's loss coming. And that's what I like about
that. He says that, I've had my time.
That's, again, that feeds into Bruce's, his why he does what he does later. But I also love that other Barry that hasn't experienced a loss yet, hears everything. Mm-hmm. And of course that, puts his emotional state in not the best point, not the best place. But the movie, that's what I'm talking about. The movie is, Muschietti is very careful here to put these key moments where they need to be to have huge impact later. And I appreciate that, because not a lot of DC movies do that. As a matter of fact, very few of them have done that. After Wonder Woman, not many have done that. And Wonder Woman was in 2017.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I think Aquaman may have had one or two of those really kind of emotional moments. But have any of the other ones, what else comes to mind as really kind of hit it emotionally?
Nothing off the top of my head, honestly. DC was, they struggled with some of that stuff for a while. So
Shazam tried, but it just neither movie really had those moments.
I mean, I guess all the way back to the Man of Steel, where his dad Kevin Costner has to die so he doesn't give up who he is. You know what I mean? Like, that's a big deal.
Oh yeah, but that was 2013. Okay, that was that was
10 years ago.
That's also, again, Wonder Woman and Man of Steel are the two best that they've done. So. Yeah, that's all. I mean, they just don't get better than those two. It's a shame, but you're right. So I do like how they nail the emotional aspect of this, and I have to give that to Andy, because he's the secret, he's the missing ingredient that we just now get. So has to be him, right? I mean, he has to be the X factor that brought that.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. But what did you not like about this one, Roger? As we last 10 or 15 minutes, what did you not like about this one?
There's not a whole lot that I don't like. We have mentioned that the original scene is pretty corny, or the first scene where he's getting stuff out of the hospital is pretty corny. I really am kind of disappointed we don't get to see his own town of Central City very much. He spends most of his movie in Gotham, or, wherever they're fighting aliens. So I thought that was kind of weird. Because it is the Flash movie, he's got his own little setup at Star Labs in, Central City, and we don't get to see that really. So I don't know. I enjoyed the Flash. I really, truly did. I think it's a shame that they can't use everything off of this movie. Like I said, it is an iconic story, and I think they did a really good job of bringing it to life the way that they did. And obviously they have to fit it to creatively to where their direction that they want their little world to go. But I was okay with the changes they make, and I'm interested to see how this plays out going forward.
I would agree with you. And again, for more of the stuff I liked before I get into what I didn't like, is I like that we get the original Batman music too. If you're a nerd from way back, you're going to love that. That's just, and we get the, we get the original, that's the original Batman vehicle, right? The Batmobile.
Yeah.
And that's all. And we get the Joker laughing bag from that time too, which, it's great. It's just, it's wonderful fan service. So I'm really happy about that. The jokes here, I think, hold about, especially about Michael J. Fox and Eric Stoltz, I think really kind of hold up very, very well. I think there's a lot of good here. For the first time in a long time, it's more good than bad, which is something, and that's very notable here. I didn't like certain things. I didn't like that they didn't go the last step with the emotional stuff, which they already had it set up right there in the supermarket, and they just didn't do it. To go four of the steps and not take that fifth. Why would you just not go the last step though? That the story really had it setting up, but. There's not much here I didn't like. There was, I don't want to say a lot of dead time, but there's a lot of, I think there's a lot more trimming they could have done to have a tighter movie here. I think a lot of it revolves around Superman. Well, who's playing the Superman role in this movie too. They're just a side character here anyway. So not a cameo, kind of a side character, but I guess you could have cut some of that out. I don't think the whole Siberia thing works really well.
Yeah.
You didn't dislike that as much as I did?
Not really. I mean, I think it fits into this little world, so I think that's fine.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. There's not a whole lot I didn't like, though. I think the movie nails what it needs to nail, and it's a shame that if you're not a DC guy and you haven't seen this, because I think if you did, you'd be singing a very different tune of DC right now. You'd be hopeful again. You'd be maybe okay. Maybe we'll, but we played this game a number of times already. So, you know, we've played this game two or three times where, you know, we watch a movie like, okay, maybe DC understands it. Maybe they get it. Maybe we'll get back on the right track. So I can understand the trepidation of people like, well, let's not get too excited for this one. But I was very happy with this movie. I'm very glad we got what we got, and it's a shame that it's, you know, towards the end of this timeline. But it is what it is. Any final thoughts, Roger, on this one?
No, last thing I do want to say is I thought it was nice that they had the two berries have different colored lightning as well. Because the colors that they represent when they run, when they break, you know, when they do their flash stuff is important in DC, or at least it used to be. Normally though, if you were running blue to white, you were stronger than anybody doing yellow and orange and red. So I thought that was doing, they kind of flipped the script on that. So, you know, it's interesting to see if they ever go with that forward. Usually the more blue it is, the stronger you are. So.
That's like real nerdy shit right there, though.
Man. Yeah.
That's really nerdy stuff. You wouldn't know that if you hadn't read a comic, but I guess one thing I do, and it's nothing against the movie because it doesn't make sense, but I would have liked to see more of Ben Affleck Batman than what we got. And it's only because I just like him. I just like his Batman. Not to say I don't like the Keaton Batman, but I do like the, you know, the old grizzled, has almost given up on everything kind of, the Ben Affleck kind of apocalyptic Batman that we get a little bit of in the beginning. And again, I appreciate it, but again, it's not that I keep wondering like, why didn't they just put them together? But it's not that movie. It's not, we're dealing with alternate timelines and not multiverses. So, right. Or is that a terrible way to explain that?
Yeah. I mean, whatever.
Fair. Yeah, I guess I would have liked to see other cameos in there. We got great cameos. I'd like to see more Wonder Woman again. It's not her movie. It's not even, you know, I think they put her in there just to remind people that, you know, Batman or Ben Affleck and Gal Gadot as their respective characters are still in the universe for whatever reason, because we didn't go back to them. So it's good that they're there. But I think the big takeaway is there's more positive here than negative. And for DC, that's a big deal because it's been a while. So. Right, Roger? Right?
Yeah. I mean, I just want them to line up some wins and do this right.
Well, I mean, just the last thing that I want to is, you're a big comic guy, and you've read these, and you're very aware of a lot of the stories that come out of the Batman universe and the Flash universe and the incredible synergy that they could have given the source material and that they don't. I know you and Chris have talked about that before. There's some incredible stories to tell in those universes, and it's a shame we're not getting them.
I mean, a lot of them are hard to put into like actual movies, but I mean, you can try. Or, I mean, Max can do whatever they want. They have their own way to release episodic stuff if they want to. So,
yeah, but I think we've learned that this episodic stuff is not nearly as successful as the movies. I think that's what they're learning. Marvel especially is learning that lesson.
Yeah, but some of the episodic stuff can be just as good as the movies.
Yeah, if you put the time and effort, it's just. Has DC had anything of note in that line?
They haven't really tried that hard.
No, they do have. I mean, Peacemaker was okay.
Yeah, I mean, that was a good show.
Yeah, but that doesn't connect, though, does it?
I have no idea, but that has James Gunn's fingerprints all over that.
that certainly does. So maybe he will include his own stuff, the Suicide Squad and the show of the Peacemaker. So I imagine he will. He'd be a fool to put that as a mainstay, but.
I mean, look, give me Peacemaker season 2, and I'm here for it.
Well, I mean, they would just sub in for the Guardians of the Galaxy in the DC world. So, I mean, that's all that would be, right?
Sure.
So, yeah, that's the whole thing. But all right, let's move to score this then. The Flash.
You want to go first or you want me to go?
I do, only because I don't want to lose my nerve and score it in front of you. But this to me...
Ooh.
I wrote this number down on a piece of paper. I'm not changing it.
It's God, you're giving it like a fucking 8.
No, this is a 7 to me.
Okay.
This movie does a lot of things very well. This movie actually way exceeded my expectations. It does a lot of things very well. So I'm going to stick with an 8. Or sorry, I'm going to stick with a 7 on this one. And we've talked at length about why I love it, but I think this is a 7 for DC.
Okay, sure. And that's fair, because that's actually where I was going to sit with it too. I thought about going a little bit higher, and then it's just not that strong for me. But look, I think in a box, you know, by itself, this movie being a 7 is a win for them. And I think that in a perfect world, this would be like, hey, this movie would have made some pretty good money if our lead actor wasn't crazy. And, you know, people would have been pretty happy with it. Now, here's the thing. It's theatrical money's probably not going to get a whole lot higher. Maybe another 25, 30 million over the next couple of weeks combine. And that's really going to be it. And that's going to be the end of the Flash as we know it. I do like the way it, you know, it drives things for the future here, but it's a very serviceable movie and a 7 for me.
All right, Roger. Thank you very much for joining me for this
episode. Yeah, man, no problem.
This has been episode 336A of For the Love of Cinema, a movie podcast, where our motto is, we just hope it doesn't suck. Each new episode posts every Tuesday and Friday at 5 a.m. on the podcast service of your choice of the following 5. Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music. Please leave a comment or 2, rate, subscribe. Every little bit helps. More importantly, thank you for listening. Check out the show on Twitter at Love Cinema Pod. I am at Grayson Maxwell 1.
Hi, I'm at Rod Stillian.
Don't forget to check us out on Facebook, always posting things on social media. Check us out on YouTube, still have a presence there, and send us an email to fortheloveofcinemapodcast@gmail.com. And next week, we're taking a look at No Hard Feelings with Jennifer Lawrence and Extraction 2 on Netflix with Chris Hemsworth.
Lots of ass whippings.
I don't know how many ass whippings are going to be in No Hard Feelings, but
sure. Many.
Many, many indeed.